You're listening to the Farmyard Podcast. This podcast is brought to you by Farmyard. It's a movement, have you heard? And our Patreon supporters.
Episode 3, Save Our Soil, with host Linda Borgi and guest Evan Folds from North Carolina.
Linda Borgi here from Farmyard. It's a movement, have you heard? Welcome, welcome to the lovely Farmyard Podcast. I have a very special guest, but what guest isn't special to me, right? They're all so special. But this young man, well, this one I happen to hold up above most people. He's really such a deep thinker, and he happens to be the Farmyard soil doctor. So he's not too fond of me calling him Dr. Folds, but it's all out of love, believe me. So what I want to do is I want to just read his biography before I get him on the line, and then we'll have a little chat with him. Evan Folds got his start in agriculture by founding a gardening store called Progressive Gardens that specialized in hydroponic and beyond organic gardening techniques. For over 14 years, Evan honed his craft and learned the art of teaching and connecting with an audience on the subjects of gardening and health. He closed Progressive Gardens in 2016 to focus on his current company, Progressive Farms, a consulting and product development company focusing on regenerative agriculture. Progressive Farms manufactures the Microbe Maker Compost Tea System and formulates an amazing compost tea recipe that can be used at home or on the farm. He is a partner in the Farmyard Project that delivers the dynamic and easy replicable steps to farming residential landscapes for homeowners interested in growing more food and even turning it into a business. Evan is passionate about growing soil, healing the earth through nutrient-dense food production, the need for personal agriculture, and healing people through vibrant local food economies. Through his consultation work, he has worked to develop the method of bioenergetic agriculture, which seeks to increase the life force of living systems through physical, mineral, biological, and energetic influence. Every time I read his bio, I smile from ear to ear. Let's get him on the line. Hey, Evan, are you there?
Hey, Linda, I am.
Hey, honey, how you doing today?
Hey, I'm good. I appreciate you asking. How are you?
I'm really great. I'm always a little bit better getting you on the line, young man. You know,
Oh, I really am. Thank you.
We have a long history, and we have a very short history, and a little funny story to go along with that. I mean, I have been connected to biodynamics for over 20 years now. I started at the Pfeiffer Center Garden in Chestnut Ridge, New York, in my mid-30s when my son was 11, and now he's 31. Oh, my goodness, they grow so fast. And I was actually the very first intern there, and we proceeded to pull iron and metal out of a junkyard. It was literally the plot that we were transforming was a junkyard. And my teacher, my mentor, Gunter Hauck, said, this will be just like a Garden of Eden. And I looked at him, you know, the first couple of weeks and said, I don't know what you're smoking there, Gunter, but I don't think this is going to be a Garden of Eden. Metal and garbage and trash. And then we began to spray these biodynamic sprays. And sure enough, within 1 year, that was a Garden of Eden. And that was enough for me. So I had followed the principles of biodynamics for these past 20 years, not really understanding it, honest to goodness, really. I mean, I read the agriculture course, and did I understand it? No, I didn't. But it gave me some recipes, and I followed the recipes, and I had some of the basic concepts, but really understanding it, I didn't. Now we're going to fast forward to today. So about a year ago, I started my Grow Food, Earn Money tour, and I'm with my cohort, Marsha Miller Howe, in Fayetteville, North Carolina, and I get a phone call from this young man, Evan Folds, and he had been directed to me from Spin Farming. That's where I had come from before I created the movement Farmyard. And the reason why I created the movement Farmyard was because no one was teaching about the soil. And here he comes to me, and he comes from a background of biodynamics. And I want you to take it from there. Can you take it from right from that bookmark, Evan?
Well, yeah.
All right.
You know, it's funny you put it. We have a long and a short history. I think that's a really apt way to describe it. It's, you know, if, when you meet someone and you felt like you've known them for a long time, I think that's an easy way to explain kind of what we've started to work on here. I was introduced to biodynamic agriculture through the book Secrets of the Soil maybe 15 years ago. And, you know, went a long time not really understanding it myself, but really kind of dove into it and had a garden center to apply it, meaning I could introduce it to other people. I could live vicariously through the results that they were getting. And we had set a brewer up in the store and we were handing it out to everybody. And it was very obvious to me the influence that it was having. And what I ran into was trying to tell the story of biodynamics from a perspective of what it's become. And it's a difficult pill for the average person to swallow. You know, the concept of there being more to life than what's physically here may be relevant to people, but I don't see that they apply it in any kind of real way. And so when you move into that application phase and you really ask people to take it seriously and put it into action, it's an interesting endeavor. And I found that, you know, there was a lot more to agronomy than just the energetic component. And that's where bioenergetic agriculture came from. It's just, for lack of a better word, a way of kind of broadening the scope of the physicality, the mineral component, soil testing, microbes, biology. And then the biodynamics really resides in the energetic. Steiner didn't really talk about soil testing and, you know, microbial balance and diversity and things of that nature. So, you know, as far as our connection goes, you know, I had not only been into biodynamics and began to apply that through my garden center and my work and product development, but I'd started a food loan project that for me was kind of an R&D trip. And it was really the on-site application of how do you farm on yards and how do you create income for people in neighborhoods and kind of boots on the ground. And so it was really striking to meet someone who was walking that same path. And I think that's brought us to here, which you constantly amaze me with your evolution of now you're making podcasts and I can't wait to see what you do next.
And the funniest part about it, now, what is today? Today is Wednesday, April the 19th, 2017, okay? Evan and I have yet to meet in person.
It's amazing.
Isn't that crazy? We will, however, meet in person on May the 13th.
The countdown is on.
Yes, when we both speak at a conference in Pittsburgh, North Carolina. You know, Evan, I'd love for you to tell the audience a little bit about your background, like the university and
yeah.
Over there on that bar that people had to jump off the boat.
Right. Well, I went to, I grew up in the city. I had a house with some cows in the backyard one time. That was about the extent of my farming. And, you know, my grandmother and my mom had gardens, raised beds, things like that. But, was always interested in the natural world, wanted to be a marine biologist and went to the University of North Carolina at Wilmington. I still live in Wilmington, North Carolina. And quickly kind of discovered that unless I wanted to specialize and go to graduate school and do all sorts of things, I really wasn't ready to commit myself to trajectory-wise, that marine biology might not be for me. So I just went general biology, decided to get a religion degree, was really a seeker. And my experience was that I learned a lot of things, but I didn't come out of it with any sort of solid philosophy about who I was or what I wanted to be. And that's, I think, not an uncommon experience in modern academia. You know, in my religion studies, it kind of You know, it doesn't tell you to develop your imagination towards it. It gives you the literalness, you know, and on some levels, that's what school's for. So I got out of school a bit disillusioned, and I decided to move down to the Virgin Islands. And my cousin had a place down there and was going to Costa Rica to go fishing and had a year lease and was like, just come down and start paying rent. So I went down there, sight unseen, didn't know anybody, and it ended up being one of the best things I ever did because it really taught me that I could go anywhere and kind of get things figured out, and I was in paradise. And the roommate that I developed, it was actually a landscaper up in Long Island, New York, and I found a book called Secrets of the Soil and kind of became aware of biodynamic farming while I was down there, and moved back to after about 8 months, I don't know, it may have been a year, I moved back to Wilmington, and back then the banks gave you money, and we started a small business called Progressive Gardens. That was 15 years ago, and it was really just a jump with 2 feet in sort of endeavor. My original insight being that people needed to be you know, closer to their food, and we needed to grow it you know, to be more of the medicine that it should be, in so many words. And so this concept of personal agriculture, that's really where that comes from, is everybody should grow something that they eat. We should nurture that spirit, because we're so far away from it. It's not even funny in the modern world, maybe further than we ever have been. So my experience of kind of, you know, going through the academia, coming out, I found this book in Secrets of the Soil. I think maybe that would be a good idea as a raffle giveaway, Linda, if you were looking for something.
Yeah.
Because it really changed my life, you know, and it really gave me, it was really a bridge for me from, you know, the analytical mind that we all have coming through school and have, you know, really needing to understand things in certain ways, towards the super sensible and those things that can't be measured. And it also, you know, introduced me to Rudolf Steiner, who I would also say his work has changed my life. And, I've spent the last 15 years trying to apply and articulate as much of that as I can and introduce it to as many people as I can. And it's become my life's work. So it's always a fascinating endeavor because, you know, as Steiner was known to say, paraphrased, you know, that the more comfortable we can become with not knowing, the more we know. And I think that's really relevant towards where we're at today is you really – it's difficult to find someone who's got it all figured out in the modern world.
Whoever has it figured out, if they could just look us up, right?
Yeah. Drop us an email.
That'd be great.
Wait for some coffee.
I'll even make them a pie. And I'm not a baker, but I'll make them a pie. You know, it's interesting. I want to interject here for those of you who have absolutely no idea about biodynamics or about Dr. Rudolf Steiner. I'm going to give you a little bit of an insight from today's model. When I was the intern at the Pfeiffer Center Garden, I had the honor of introducing a gentleman, Dr. Ibrahim Aboulish, and he was from Egypt, and he had started a biodynamic initiative in Egypt in 1977. So, not a billion years ago, all right? So now let's fast forward to 2017. Today, right there in that initiative, they are converting desert sand to humus, topsoil, okay? Desert sand to topsoil at the rate of double the size of Central Park every year. So, how does sand, Evan, turn into humus?
Well, it's a process of, you know, in short, growing soil, not just plants. You know, modern agriculture is based on fertilization and what Charles Walters, who started Acres USA, called toxic rescue chemistry, whereas it's a bit like, you know, eating fast food and then, you know, managing it with pharmaceuticals in a, you know, quick way of saying it. So, you know, what's happening with biodynamics is it's kind of, as I see it, the glue that holds everything together. One of the insights that I had initially was, you know, is it enough to spray fields with frequencies and field sprays to regenerate it? And, you know, on some levels it is. It takes, in my experience, if you're doing soil testing and compost teas and things like that, cover crops, etc. You can facilitate that process. But essentially, you know, to answer your question, literally the way soil is developed is through, you know, we take it for granted, but up to half, sometimes some cases more than half of the energy that plants make for themselves in photosynthesis is fed to the soil in the form of what's called exudates. And the exudates are like little sugar meals to attract microbes. And, you know, there's an intelligence there. You know, if there's a boron deficiency or a manganese deficiency or whatever deficiency that's not even on this, you know, the radar of modern agriculture, you know, the plant can send a signal to ask a microbe to do the work. So that symbiosis is really critical to any natural system. And then in microbes eating themselves. And in a very, you know, simple, rough way of thinking about it, that's how soil grows, is through, it's the guts of microbes and, you know, grown by the sugar meals of plants. So, you know, is it possible to grow soil without plants present? No, plants are part of the process. And I think that the takeaway is as much diversity as we can bring to the table, the faster the soil will grow. And then our job as agronomists is to nurture that rather than work against it.
Tell us, what is everyone's biggest problem that they have today? Let's say my next door neighbor wanted to go outside and dig up her turf and farm her yard. What would be the steps that you would tell her to take insofar as getting familiar and developing a relationship with the soil?
Yeah, that's a good question. The first thing is really to think about the situation. You know, all soil is not the same. In a lot of ways, Progressive Gardens was a boot camp for me because it created so many different scenarios with people, almost exactly as if, you know, what you're saying. It could be that turning up grass to farm the earth in your yard, or it could be filling a raised bed, you know, thinking that you're making a more qualitative situation faster. And in some cases you can. But in both scenarios, the assumption tends to be that everything that's required for a healthy ecosystem is present. And that's just not the case in a residential landscape. And it's not necessarily the homeowner's fault. I mean, if you think about property development, you know, you take the top 2 feet of soil off to the level of the land, or you bring in some cheap fill, you know, put it this way, your contractor's not required to be a soil agronomist. So, you know, there's no attention put into the quality of the landscape that's developed. It's really just set up to look the part. And what most people experience is over time, degeneration ensues. And that, you know, from a lawn care perspective, results in people replacing their lawn with sod every couple of years and chasing their problems around. So when you pull, you know, you turn that grass up and you try to plant a garden, somewhat depends on your geography. I mean, in Wilmington, where I live, just like in Beaufort, where you are, the soil's terrible, you know, so you kind of almost immediately discover where there's something that's not right here. Whereas if you're in Ohio or upstate New York, where you've got a topsoil reserve that, you know, can be taken advantage of over time, you know, maybe you can pull it up and pour some Miracle-Gro on it and get a result. So, I mean, hundreds of times people would come in that have moved into Wilmington. It's a beach town. A lot of people move in here to retire, and they'd come and perform the same exercise in their backyard here that they did in Ohio, and it just didn't work. You know, and they'd come in like, well, why is that? And that was the perfect opportunity to say, well, you know, soil is alive. You know, and that concept is as simple as it is really kind of, you know, over most people's heads. I can't say that I really came out of school with that firm understanding. I never studied it directly, having kind of sought it out. But try drinking a beer without yeast, right? Or you know, think kombucha or vinegar or bread or any number of different biological cheese, you know. These things are defined by the microbes, and the same is true with the soil. So, you know, I would say think about it first, and I would say put it into perspective. You know, don't make the assumption that everything's going to be right from the get-go. And then, you know, from that point, use organic methods, not just because they're good for the earth, but because they grow the soil, they work better. Done properly, they're a lot more cost-effective. And then, you know, consider starting a compost pile, things of that nature. But I would say that just to kind of not, you know, wrap that up, I would say, you know, your perspective of what the landscape is as an ecosystem is step number one. And when you know that the ecosystem is not intact and microbes don't jump over the fence, well, that kind of leads you into, well, how do I access those? And that's where the composting and the compost tea comes from. And, you know, we build from there.
Definitely. And, you know, they don't jump over the fence. And, I mean, I came from the Hudson Valley. I came from Hardpan. And I thought that was really like the worst in the world, you know? And it wasn't. The soil down here is. I mean, this is sand. There's sand. Yeah. The only thing that really is very abundant here are fire ants. Big hills of fire ants. So, boy, you know, I had to bring in some organic material just to have something for the microbes to munch on, you know? And then I started, you know, applying compost tea. Now, before we get into the compost tea, I want to make sure that the listeners are aware that soil that you're purchasing in a bag, right, is generally pasteurized. Isn't that correct, Evan? So it's dead.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the large majority of them. And then the ones that do claim microbes tend to be very selectively accessed, meaning, you know, we know 5% of bacteria and 10% of fungi at the rate of discovery. So the idea of humans picking certain microbes to be in soil is a bit like trying to make an ocean out of a lake. You know, we're not equipped to do that. But yeah, in general terms, you're correct. Most soils, you can't assume that the soil in the bag's alive. Absolutely.
No. So in other words, if you were to get a bag of, let's say, composted cow manure, right?
Mm-hmm.
That would have to be pasteurized before it could be sold in a store. Is that correct?
Oh, that's a good question. I think it would depend on the scale of the operation.
Gotcha.
And things like that. But one thing you can say for certain is that most composted cow manure is not actual compost. It's not humus or plant food. It's aged manure, you know, and it's sold as compost. And that's a lot of what people, you know, don't, when they don't get the result out of the compost that they buy, 9 times out of 10, it's because it's not actual humus.
It's not just actual humus.
It's
a
manure. Right.
Well, what I brought on here was I bought some cow manure with compost material added to it. And you could only get this particular bag in Florida. And mushroom compost. Mm-hmm. Because I didn't have any organic material in here. And then I started applying microbes in the form of compost tea. So if you would tell everyone about compost tea in a box, because I got to tell you, you can't get it any easier than this, folks. I mean, 20 years ago, if I had this, man, everybody would be stirring and spraying by now. But I only came upon it a year ago, so just give me a little bit of time. So tell them about compost tea in a box.
Yeah, well, you know, what you're doing there is ideal. And I want to be clear, you know, not trying to pick on, you know, cow manure or compost because they're very cost effective. You know, all of those like really inexpensive compost products, I would actually suggest people do get those. But with the knowledge that you need to bring in the microbes that make it what it can be, it's good potential, in other words. Mm-hmm. So absolutely do those things. And that's really where the compost tea comes in. It's not, you know, the recipe that we put together is pretty incredible. But compost tea is not a defined substance. So, you know, you can make compost tea out of your own compost. The key is to make sure that you've got all the microbes present to ensure that you're making compost to begin with. Because again, in my experience in Progressive Gardens, dealing with the general public is that the majority of people that are composting at home had never sought a diverse microbial source. And because their landscape wasn't inoculated with diversity of nature, mm-hmm. they were making mulch. You know, right. They weren't getting the pile heating up. They weren't getting the cycling that they expected. And they weren't getting the results that they wanted. So what compost tea is, from our perspective, in terms of the product that we've made, the little bundle called compost tea in a box, comes in 25, 50, 100, 200, 400 gallon bundles. And most people would just brew in a 5-gallon bucket. You know, you can brew larger volumes commercially, and we make the microbe makers to do that. But you could brew compost tea in a 5-gallon bucket, just like an aquarium setup. You know, it's an air pump pumping air through some tubing and an air stone to break the bubbles up to diffuse more oxygen. And instead of, you know, doing that for fish in an aquarium, we're doing it for microbes and really good compost. And when you add the humus compost to the aerated water, it allows the microbes to breathe. And then we feed them with earth syrup and earth kelp. And we've combined all of the materials of the food sources into a blend called Earth TKS. So you basically, you get this compost tea in a box bundle. It's got a little scoop. You add a scoop of compost, 3 scoops of TKS in the 5-gallon bucket. Let that aerate and brew for at least 12 hours, no longer than really 24, 36 hours, and then use it. And, you know, as far as the application, the recipe that we set up is very forgiving. So you could use a gallon per 500 square feet. You could use a gallon in 5 square feet. And the analogy I like to leave people with is to consider the microbes like construction workers. You know, the more often you bring them to the job site, the more you bring it one time, more concentrated you use it, the faster they build the neighborhood. So there's not really a right and wrong in terms of the dilution or lack of dilution for that matter. It's more of a better best analysis.
And really, you could look at the compost tea mixture after it's brewed as like a sourdough starter.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah, it's that's exactly right. It's for just for the soil instead of for the bread. That's exactly right.
Now, I just want everyone to realize that the compost that you're putting in the compost tea in a box is biodynamic.
That's correct. It's, yes. Well, it's called Earth Compound.
Yeah.
And what we do is it's really focused on diversity. So we bring together a certified organic farm compost, a biodynamic farm compost, worm castings, grain-fed worm castings, archaea, which are kind of a different category of soil microbe that's only really recently being understood in totality, or I guess it would never be in totality. But we bring those together, we blend them, screen them by hand, and then we influence those with the biodynamic preparations through the process that Steiner suggested. So, you know, we are making a biodynamic humus that is very concentrated. The key is diversity, strength and diversity. It's not a cliche for nothing kind of thing.
I hope the listeners really realize what you just said. I mean, organic compost, biodynamic compost, a new little micro buddy that isn't being used, you know, hand screened. And what do we have to do on our end? We take 1 scoop of this and 2 scoops of that. 1 scoop of the compost, and then the compost food. Every time I put the food in the bucket, that's what I call it, the food, you know? I say, here comes Thanksgiving dinner, because I just picture them just like, wow, look at all this food. And then applying it, and now I have organic material for them. So I'm not going to put them out in sand and have them die, because that's what would have happened if I didn't add something. And another thing I wanted to bring to the listeners' attention is this. In reference to making a compost pile, I was an urban farmer for 11 years, and I did not produce enough organic material to really build a pile. And when I say really build a pile, I mean, okay, now I'm going to gather my material. I have this pile of weeds, and I have this pile of coffee grounds, and I have this pile of plant material. And now I'm going to make my compost pile, right? And really, I don't have a lot of waste coming out of my kitchen, not enough to form a pile. So I instead would just keep worms. Those red wigglers, I'm telling you, they demolish food. And worm poop is really, really great for humus, isn't it, Evan?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's actually, worms are highly bacterial. So I think, from what I understand, they have a greater bacterial diversity than general compost would. But they actually also don't have a complete food web in their stomachs. So they're a perfect complement to compost. And that's really why you see a lot of worms show up in the compost pile when you have it properly inoculated. And a lot of people want to buy worms and put them in the raised bed. But if you hadn't had this conversation with yourself and ensured the soil food web is healthy in your garden, the worms are running for the hills, because there's nothing, they're not necessarily wanting to eat the dead roots. They're wanting to eat what's eating the dead roots. So that, you know, diversity conversation, and think about the worms like the whale in the ocean, and think about the bacteria like the plankton. You know, and you need all of them there to create the balance and the strength of the ecosystem.
Okay, I have a question for you, my dear.
Shoot.
If everything was right in the world right now, what would Progressive Farms look like?
Wow. If everything was right in the world.
Meaning we weren't growing 48.5 million acres of lawn, right?
Right.
And largest cultivated crop in the country. You know, the reason why I said this is because it just is so frustrating. I know it's frustrating to you, and it is so frustrating to me that people aren't taking the baton.
Well, I appreciate that clarification. I think I understand what you're saying, and I would say yes. It you wouldn't be a thinking, feeling human being if you didn't have a level of frustration towards the way we produce food and the way that agronomy is conducted. 99%, less than 1% of farms are certified organic in the U.S. Not to mention, you know, what you said, 40 million acres of lawn, and you know, it's something like, I don't even have how many times larger of a crop, irrigated crop, it is than corn, which is 10 times larger than anything else. I mean, just the efforts that we're undertaking versus the rewards that we're experiencing don't add up. And what started me in this, I mentioned Secrets of the Soil, and then the next book that I read was The Agriculture Course, which is Steiner's lectures. And in the introduction of the lectures, there's a quote where he's asked basically the same question. You know, you spend a lot of time trying to instill these spiritual truths in people and have them see these things in a more spiritual, scientific way. And not a lot of people take you up on it. You know, why is that? And his answer was, it's a matter of nutrition. And he said that food no longer contains the forces people need to bring their will into action. And whenever I say that, I get a download. It's like, it gives me the chills, because for me, that is it. You know, that's putting your finger on the problem as best as you can. And when you take that understanding that our food is not nourishing us to allow the expression of our humanity, if we really internalize what that means, one, it helps us seek out those things that will stimulate that. And I can tell you that, you know, we used to grow commercial wheatgrass, and I've seen it change people's lives. Plants and the medicine that they are can be accessed with intention. It's just not the default. And, you know, our meals are coming from 1500 miles away, and they're bred to sit on a shelf and to produce yield. And they, you know, you can look up the USDA data of what food's missing today versus what was there in 1950. I think it's something like you need 26 apples to get the amount of iron out of one from 1950, which is just off the charts.
And forget about spinach. There's so many categories. There's so many of them.
You go down the list. Ugh. So, you know, definitely frustrating. I can tell you, I used to be a lot more frustrated than I am. Because I, you know, when I first found all of this, I felt like the world was changing, and mine was. and I was, you know, in my naivete, I think, assuming that people would just see it as clearly and as directly as I did. And that wasn't my experience, and hasn't been. And I've, you know, calibrated it. It's not, I don't really, from a personal standpoint, look at it as trying to convert people. You know, my experience more is, let's create some space, some dialogue, some understanding, maybe some new words to help people think about these things, right? Let's introduce them to how to grow food that's closer to them and better for them. And through that process, people wake up and they find what they need when they need it. And, you know, I have faith in that. And I would just also add that when I found Steiner, it really gave me a construct to be confident in it. And what I mean is, my grandfather introduced me to a book called Guns, Germs, and Steel. It was a long time ago, and he's since passed. And he was very influential to me. He was, you know, a writer, wrote books. He was the editor of the News and Record in Greensboro. And this book was an attempt by Jared Diamond to really articulate why certain parts of the world develop faster than others. And it came down to what crops could be domesticated locally. And even the orientation of the continent. If you think about Africa, it's a north-south continent versus, you know, Europe is east-west, and you've got more of a growing environment. And the Fertile Crescent had the most domesticable species of plants in the world. Wheat, things like that, sorghum. And then if you look at the animals that are there, there's no animal in Africa that can be domesticated. You can't put zebras in a field or giraffes. So it was fascinating to me because it said, oh, it's not just like happenstance. There was actually a method to the madness. And I say that because it's interesting and you should pursue that book. But Steiner did the same thing for me spiritually. He had a basically a spectrum of understanding. And I'm going to use some words that might evoke some kind of religiosity. And that's really not the attempt. And it's really why it's difficult to talk about, because we're so conditioned to things in ways that our dogma affects our ability to see it objectively. And I'm the same way. That's not a judgment. But the way he talked about it was, you know, that Lucifer was kind of this knowingness that came from, you know, let's just say before history, and that people were not as physical as they are. And they came into their physicality through what he called the mystery of Golgotha, or the Christ consciousness, which is the event that spawned Christianity and all sorts of changes for the world, for that matter. I think that's pretty it's hard to doubt that, but it is very difficult to define exactly what it means. And it means different things to different people. But the point being, he saw that as a seminal experience for the earth, as kind of an impregnation of the spiritual energy. And what we're moving through now is what he called Ahriman. So you have this like knowingness in Lucifer, and you have this materialism and airiness in Lucifer, and you have materialism in Ahriman. And, you know, not to get too long-winded about it, but what it says for me is that the times that we're going through, we're supposed to be experiencing. And, you know, he said this back in 1920-something, you know, and he saw it coming. And he even said that there would be a personification of Ahriman at some point in the future. And, you know, whether you want to say that's Donald Trump or not, some people would say that's Hillary Clinton. I mean, who are we to say? Not that politicians run and rule the world. In some respects, they do, I guess, on some level.
No, but they're still definitely opposing forces.
Yeah, and that dynamic of those opposing forces, the balance is what we want, you know? And so the point being is that when I found Steiner and really read him and tried to internalize what it is that he was bringing forward, he was telling us that we're supposed to be experiencing these things. It's not bad luck. It's a test. It's, do we have the backbone to consciously co-create with nature? I mean, we found out how we can dominate her, and she's going to win in the end. You know, no doubt. But our challenge is, you know, do we go put the pedal to the metal for, you know, materialism and artificiality and, you know, human centeredness? Or do we take a step back and a deep breath and say, look, we can consciously integrate with living systems in the modern, you know, posture of how we've expect our lives to be? And that for me is kind of it. And as much work as you can do in regards to making it simpler and, you know, more tenable to operate in regenerative and bioenergetic ways, the better the earth gets. That's kind of some thoughts on how I think about, you know, where we're at and where we've come from.
And I think really we're looking at energy. That's really what we're looking at. I mean, that's what it is for me. I have been co-creating with nature. I mean, actually, I get a little bit more help from the other side than I put in sometimes. That's what I think anyway. But, you know, working with those energies, because everything is a frequency. It all winds up being a frequency. And you know, Evan, I am so far from being scientific, you know, when it comes to talking about boron and chelators and all those things, my mind shuts down. But through really the keen skill of observation, because that is the skill anyone needs to hone in on when they are wanting to work in conjunction with nature and with the forces that are out there available to be used. It's through the skills of observation. But we are currently in a time of the dumbing down of society, and we are very distracted. I understand the distractions. I understand all of that. And I never said I was a saint. I do have patience. But really, the time is now. The time is right now to grow the food where we are and eat the food where it's growing. It's not difficult. When you have things like this high-level thinker that has been able to put it right down into a small little box, one scoop of this and two scoops of that, that's a starting point. That is a beginning. You know, I don't want anyone to think that I am promoting a quote-unquote product. I'm not promoting a product. I want the country sprayed, and I want it sprayed with biodynamics involved, because that is the energy shifter. And that's where we need the shift to take place. Once the shift takes place in the energy field, you know, then it'll take place everywhere. And I'm going to tell you a short story that I think it was 10 years ago when I was in my 52. So I'm 62 now. When I was 52, I bought a tractor. I bought a John Deere tractor. I did. I bought it used. I had it painted purple. It was an orchard tractor. It was 5 feet wide to go in between the rows, you know, but it was 72 horsepower. It was really a kick-ass machine. And I got a 110-gallon orchard sprayer, and I got a 100-gallon brewer. And I started brewing the biodynamic preparations. And I thought, now I'm not kidding you, I thought beyond a shadow of a doubt that I was going to spray the country. I was going to spray the whole darn country with that tractor and that sprayer. Well, I didn't spray the country because I realized that I only have to spray my part of the country and everybody else needs to spray their part of the country. I mean, after all, we did Hands Across America, right? We all held hands and we sang a song across America. Well, why can't we have a stir, 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 sprinkle, sprinkle, spray, spray day? Well, we can.
Yeah.
We can. We could declare it. We could take up the baton. We could activate our will into action. And the action, step one, is to get an intimate relationship with the earth beneath your feet. And that's the soil. It's only 6 inches. It's a 6-inch layer. And the fact that it rains, that we exist. We need to take the power back into our own hands and develop that relationship.
Mm.
So there you go. We're going to spray the country, right, Evan?
That's right.
That's right. We're going to, let's tell them how to do that. How can they? Well, first of all, in the show notes, I will put all of the books that Evan referenced, and naturally the website for Progressive Farms. And anyone that's listening to this podcast, and if when you go and purchase your compost in a box, in the discount area there, the coupon code, just put in FarmAYard, farm-a-yard, and you'll get 10% off for that 25 gallons of compost tea. Remember, that is the sourdough starter. That 25 gallons can turn into being 50 gallons, depending on what use. What are you doing with it? Are you soaking seeds? Are you covering a compost pile? Are you spritzing your worms? Are you inoculating your beds? You know? So there you go. That is composting. So what else do we want to talk about, Evan? In closing, what do you have to say to these beautiful people who are listening to us today?
Oh, well, just thanks for turning your ears on. Really. I mean, this is, these sorts of things are unbelievably important. And, you know, as we organize ourselves around how we generate information for ourselves, I look forward to, you know, doing this sort of thing with you a lot, Linda. You know, it might be good to check in for an hour once a week and or whenever you think it might be prudent.
I think it's a good idea because agriculture right now is fluid and things are changing so rapidly. If you have not listened to the podcast that was published called The Seedy Story, that's the review of a documentary called Seed, The Untold Story. Please be sure to listen to that and you'll see how important it is. 94% of our vegetable varieties have vanished in 1 century. So everything is moving, everything is fluid, and I think it's important to check in with your doctor more than most, right? Especially this doctor. This one I believe in, gosh. And those that know me, I don't go for the other ones at all. I mean, really, it's so painful, but it's the truth. Well, thank
bless
you, my,
you, Linda.
Thank you, my dear. Thanks so much for spending this time with us, and we will catch up with you on the flip side.
Next on the FarmYard podcast, Linda will be interviewing Liana Hoods, former executive director for the National Organic Coalition.
This podcast is community supported. We thank everyone for tuning in, and a special thank you goes out to all our Patreon sponsors. If you enjoy our content, please subscribe and share. You can help support us through Farmyard, all one word, on patreon.com.